Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for informational and educational purposes only.
Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dr. Rowdy Scott Stevenson.
What did you? That was on. We didn't rehearse that. How did you? Where did I mention my nickname of being Rowdy?
I know
Rowdy?
Stuff about you. I've been doing my research. I talked to your old college buddies.
Yeah, well, some of those posts have been open. Yeah, that was the nickname in college.
We talked about it a few episodes ago. Did we? Okay.
I couldn't remember. Yeah. It comes up every once. I've been spending a lot of time with my mom, so she always likes to tell the story. Did I tell this story on the podcast? I can't remember because it's come up a few times, but
about how she didn't know that was your nickname, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yes, yes. That's how we heard about it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's I've been meeting all sorts of a lot of her friends, some people that I hadn't met before. So they've been down here with her a lot since my dad had passed. So those have come up, the college stories that became unearthed.
Oh boy.
She would come visit. Yeah. No, she's fine with it. It doesn't bother her one bit, but it was just really funny that she had no idea. I've told her all sorts of things that she had no clue about. Of course, the statute of limitations passed now.
Right. You can't be grounded anymore.
Nope. I'm way past. Once you're 20 years out of college, then you can no longer, be grounded and to come in before after the streetlights come on
So we are recording this on New Year's Eve. This will be out on Thursday as always, which will be into the new year. This will be the first episode of Muscle Minds coming out for 2019, Scott.
Is our 51st, something like that? Is that right?
I think so. Yep. We're right around there. 51st episode. That sounds right to me.
Yeah. You know, here's a thought, because I was sort of I was pondering the end of the year, and of course we'll have the New Year's resolutioners coming into the gyms and that sort of thing, and I'm thinking of like some of the things that have happened in 2019. Of course, that thought popped in my head, like, oh, or 2018. It'll be nice when this year's over so I can start anew. And then immediately came to my mind, it's like, it's such a bizarre thing that humans do, is we pay so close attention to our calendar, and we use that to kind of dictate the way in which we live our lives, and it's basically a representative of the fact that our brains so often want to reflect on the past or create anticipation or anxiety or fear about the future.
Sure.
And rather than just living in the moment.
Yeah.
And like literally that's, the New Year's resolutions fail miserably year in and year out. It's, you will see how we can count them. Like, that could be like a task. How many times where you see people post on Facebook or some form of social media about how much they dislike the new people coming into their gym who will come and go, but it will happen and people will get pissed at it each and every year. But the thing is that really you can just, You can survive any moment in the moment unless you actually are dying, which only happens once.
Right.
For most people, at least, I guess you can die and come back technically. But and all those thoughts of like, gosh, I can't wait until 2018's in the past. Just the fact that popped in my head, I just started laughing at myself. It's like, really? Does it really matter what the calendar year is? Do I have to use... Like, does my mind really need to have some way of partitioning out the past based on the calendar year in order to put it behind me?
Right.
Or can I just put things behind me whenever I want to?
Can. I like really that.
Can. Yeah.
You know what? I remember somebody taught me this probably a decade ago, the idea that you can start your day over at any time. I remember being trapped in like, oh, I'm in a bad mood. These bad things are happening this morning and now my day's ruined. But guess what? It's not, you know, you can decide to change it right now. And I think what you're saying ties right along in with that idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. All you have is this present moment. It's the first day of the rest of your life, basically. And it's the youngest, the oldest you'll ever be. Hmm. You know, and, you can just go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, one way of framing the source of our misery and dissatisfaction and dislike of our lives is to recognize that we get trapped by our past. And, you know, this is not to say that someone who's been traumatized can just sort of like snap their fingers and wave a magic wand and all of a sudden vanishes.
Right.
I know that one for sure. But we hang on to things in the past and let them dictate our present moment and forecast our future. And then we anticipate things that haven't yet happened.
Yeah.
So many things, you know, that obviously you should take action when you really suspect something's going to happen and you've got good reason to prevent something bad from happening. But so much of what we lose in the present moment is a function of just having a fear of something that hasn't yet come to be.
Hmm.
You know, if you just say, okay, have I done everything I can possibly do to prevent that undesirable future, whatever it may be? And it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, then I'm good. There's no reason to stress about it, worry about it. So yeah, our suffering is a matter of our imagination for the most part, unless you're like in a POW camp, you know, or, you know, you're literally, you know, in some sort of physical illness or state that's causing you pain, which you can just deal with in any moment as well.
Yeah.
Certainly. But yeah. So anyway, that was the thought that occurred to me today when I was thinking about it being New Year's Eve and the year turning over. And I just had that thought. How many times I've already seen this? Like, I can't wait. 2019 is going to be a brand new year for me. Everything's going to start and it's all going to vanish away. But that's available to you in every single moment of every single day, really.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't let that escape us.
I like that reminder. I appreciate it personally. I would say, like, in the past, I made fun of the idea of New Year's resolutions and I don't make like a traditional New Year's resolution so much, but I do try to meditate on some things that I want to achieve over the following year. And I usually kind of take like the end of December, beginning of January to think about those things and kind of turn them into something solid. And then I just say to myself, okay, you know, these are things that I'm going to focus on this year. And they're things that I want to improve, you know? And so I kind of make it like the year of that. I mean, there was a year that I said, I want to be able to buy my own car brand. I wanted to be able to buy a new car and I want to be able to do that with money that I make from coaching. And so like, that was my goal that I set out and it took till like September to make that happen. But I did, you know, and it felt really good. It sometimes it's less tangible, like other years. And this year will, I'm sure, be the same. I've said, you know, I want to grow Advices Radio. What does that mean? You know, so this year I'm actually getting specific with the things I want to do to grow it. But in the past it had been more of a general thing. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't necessarily discourage the idea of resolutions, but you know, traditionally the ones that we think of, like, you know, I'm going to start going to the gym, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm going to start eating healthy now, you know, and then somebody binges all the way right up to, you know, the first, and then they're going to start after the weekend, after the holidays over,
right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that as long as you're conscious of and mindful of the fact that you can really use time points as hooks, you can use them to your advantage. Not be imprisoned by them, but use them as time points along, for instance, a goal setting path. And obviously, I'm big on goals. You've got my Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach book, and goals are super important because it gives you a direction, a trajectory to follow.
And that's kind of where you start the book out at, pretty much too. That's kind of a great thing to a foundation before you even get into doing what you're doing.
Yeah. So use those handholds as sort of like You know, figure out where you're going to go, and then recognize that you're going to find some handholds along that path, rather than say, okay, so because, you know, I'm not going to start my goal until I'm going to start my working towards my goal until it's January, you know, which of course is just a day off. But some people would wait, and they wait, and now it's there's probably some built-in excuses that are behind that kind of decision making. But they're become prisoners literally. Rather than someone who's using time points and the calendar to their advantage. Yeah. So time in our conceptualization of time can either be useful to us or can be imprisoning of us.
Yeah.
And it's kind of your choice to do it however you like. So the same thing with your mind. You know, your mind is, you know, this is the larger picture of the same concept, is that your mind can be your absolute worst prison and worst nightmare, or it can be your best tool. But you can get very trapped in that, and that's obviously a huge topic for maybe another podcast.
Yeah, it's a good one though.
Yeah, but so as long as you realize, okay, my mind is not helping me in this point, and there's obviously a catch-22. It's a paradox wrapped in an enigma. In order to try to figure that one out, but use it to your advantage. Don't be used by it whenever possible.
Hey, I have some questions here. These are not our questions from the board. Actually, one of them is posted there. He said it's not necessarily a show question though. And then I had another question that was sent to me on DM over at Instagram. I wanted to make just, you know, a little brief discussion on these two things, because I thought they both were important. They're both relevant and they both tied into our show. My question's a little bit more fun. Well, yours is fun too, but fun in a different way. But I thought this would be a great segue to talk about some upcoming stuff. This question was for you, Scott, and it's from Yogi over on the Advices forums. He says, not a question for the show necessarily, but is the Bodybuilding Fact and Fiction seminar Dr. Scott and John Meadows did available online anywhere?
Yeah, that's the one we did at the Arnold Classic last year. And John's got that up on his site. So if you're a member of his site, which I think is like $15 a month, you can go and watch those videos. We're doing it again. We're back in 2019.
Yes.
And this time we have got the ever so meek and demure Dr. Eric Serrano on the panel too. Yeah. He's going to do, I think he's going to add some things. Who knows where he's going to go? He picks a topic and then he just talks about what he wants to, but it's always fascinating. So it's not like you're missing out, but the focus is going to be on testosterone, HRT, and evaluating blood work and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So John's doing two new talks. I'm doing two new talks, and then Serrano's going to do that. Hopefully we can keep him to an hour so we can do like a no holds barred Q&A at the very end.
Ooh. So this was a great seminar last year. And last year I remember I was, traveling down there and stuff. I was all amped up, and then I ended up like just totally crashing. I think like I didn't sleep the night before very well. I can't remember what it was, but I'm excited for this one because I get to do it again, and I get to be, you know, like 110% present this time. So this is going to be, is it Thursday before the Arnold?
Yes. Well, yeah, sort of the third. There are some things going on that Thursday. I think there's some of the amateur bodybuilding and just a couple other events, but it's the 28th of February. It's the last day of February. Thursday, pretty much all day long at the DoubleTree Columbus downtown, which is really close to everything. We're going to have Amy's Donuts there again. Those donuts are ridiculous. Exactly. They're not even like, they shouldn't even be called donuts. There needs to be another word for whatever those things are, because they're works of culinary and gustatory art.
And BYOS, bring your own Slin.
There you go. Yes. But people who are jumping in and through Slindos will be allowed.
Yes.
At the seminar. So, of course, donuts, you know, these are not like low fat. They don't have, actually, I checked for someone. Someone wanted a low fat donut, and they don't have any low fat donuts. So, maybe not the best. unless you're just doing a dirty, dirty, dirty bulk and just don't give a rat's ass, you just want to get as big and round as humanly possible, then Slin with donuts is probably not the best choice. But, hey, you know.
I like, you know, we got to bring that hashtag Slindo. We got to bring that back.
The Slindo, yeah.
That was a good one. That was early on in the show, the Slindo.
Yeah, yeah. We need to make sure that that remains as a part of bodybuilding vernacular.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's when you what's your Slindo
looking like? Did you train today, Scott? Are you in the Slindo right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
I like that. So, man, I'm excited. That'll be fun. So you're working on new things for this right now. This is going to be cool, man. You're going to be there. Like we talked about last week on Blood, Sweat, and Gear, Skip's going to be there. VJ should be there on Saturday. And Dr. Steve Ogden is coming out. I'll be hanging with Sarah Smith is supposed to give me the tour of the facilities at the Arnold. And I'm going to get to see backstage this year, which I my mind is blown about that, Scott. Like cool. Seeing backstage at the Arnold, you know, I'm excited. We're going to have, there's going to be some really good
Sarah's
competitors.
Direct you back there. Is she's your hookup or?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Actually, Mike Davies of Rough, Rugged and Raw podcast. You guys can check that out. We talk about it all the time on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. Sarah works with him and she said so far, the only job she has is to hang out with us for the weekend. So we'll see how that goes. I have to imagine she's going to get busy at some point. And she still has to keep the gym open, right. Metro Fitness West. So there's going to be a lot going on though, and I'm excited, man. It's a couple months away, but it's coming in fast, you know.
Have you thought about getting a press pass?
You know what? I probably should. You know what else too? I'm supposed to get access to everything. So I don't know if I need the press pass, but it wouldn't hurt. One thing that I want to talk to you more about this, because this is an idea. It's evolving. You know, we did the Bodybuilding Nerds meetup last year and the year before. It's become a regular thing. I have an idea. Sarah and I were brainstorming this the other night. We're thinking about getting a conference room at the Hyatt. And just doing a short little get together where we can meet and greet for 25 minutes and then do a live podcast for about an hour, give some stuff away. We'll have, here's the deal is that Best Bar Ever, Michael Clay, is willing to sponsor us with whatever we want to do. So I actually need to find out from the Hyatt if there is going to be a meeting room available. And then I kind of want to take the temperature. You know, it's something like if you're already at the Arnold, it's Saturday morning. You're already there. I'm not asking you to go anywhere else. You know, the Hyatt's attached right there at the expo. So it might be a 2-minute walk over to us, but would you guys be interested in something like that? And, if we could twist Dr. Scott's arm, would he want to join us and, you know, do this? What we were thinking is, you know, VJ and I would just kind of introduce everybody and then, you know, run it a Q&A style from there. Have people there in the audience actually get to stand up to a mic. And, you know, ask questions, whether they be serious questions or fun questions, just give everybody a chance to interact with everybody else, you know, with everybody from the podcasts. I was thinking about, I'm trying to get Victoria to come out and hopefully Skip will make it. This is all real tentative, loose stuff. And, but I think it could be fun. There's a lot of ifs involved so far, but we have time.
Well, one of the big ones, and I know this just from, having secured our room last year at the DoubleTree, is that most of the hotels, literally the vast majority that are in reasonable distance, not all of them, but many of them have contracted with the Arnold, and those people who have paid for booths, I think the cheapest of which was like 10 grand last year.
Yeah.
They have dibs on those rooms, and literally, unless you're a sponsor of the show, you can't get those rooms.
Well, boom. Then I got to turn to Mike. Yeah. Because Mike is a sponsor of the show.
So if he's a sponsor, like an official sponsor of the show, which I don't know that he was last year because he sponsored a seminar with John.
Well, he I mean he had a booth.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe
he's with Nature's Bounty, and they're going to have even a bigger booth. By the way, Best Bar Ever is going to have a bigger booth this year.
Oh, bet you're in then.
And they've got a new product coming out, but we'll talk more about that later. But the cool thing is Mike told me, he was like, "Hey, you guys don't need to like do this to promote Best Bar." He was like, "I want to do it so you guys can do your thing, you know, at full capacity, basically."
Right. Well, yeah. Have him then. All he needs to do is provide the Hyatt, assuming those rooms haven't filled up. They literally.
I'll find out.
Yeah, they block it all off. So.
Yeah, I'll find out.
Yeah, I'm definitely down. What were you thinking? Saturday? Is that which day were you going to do?
That's usually what we've done. We figured that everybody who's come into the Arnold is already there. You know, they're already hanging out, and you know, you're not asking anybody to come in earlier or to stay late, and you know, you're already going to be at the expo on Saturday morning and do it before prejudging, so it doesn't get in the way of anything either. You know,
right?
But
I like it.
I'll keep you posted. And guys, if you have any thoughts, if you have some interest in this, let me know, because you know, it's a commitment before being at the booth. It's one thing to say just stop by the booth, but it's another thing to ask you to walk, you know, down the hall for a couple minutes and find where we're at, and you know, it's a little bit more in depth. So it would be fun if it all comes together. I've got another question, and this one was directed at me, Scott. This is from Instagram, and I thought this is a good place for it.
Yes.
It's from JD_M100. Jacob is his name. He says, I've become quite a fan lately of Advices Radio and Bodybuilding Nerds after discovering the podcast just a few weeks back. Burning question. What are your favorite flavors and brands of kombucha? And I'm going to tell you why this ties in here, Scott, because, you know, I was thinking about it, and this is, you know, a few episodes back now, you had said, "Hey guys, you know, after your father passed away, I appreciate it. You don't need to drop me a message or post on my wall with your condolences. It's like, I really do appreciate it. But what would make me happy is to see you go out and do something new in your life and take a picture of it and tag me in that."
Mm-hmm.
And man, I thought that was the coolest idea ever. And to me, kombucha it's kind of like a freedom. It's fun. So here's my thought. There's so many different brands. There's so many different flavors, so many different shapes and bottles and colors. It's in anywhere you go. Like, you go to a different state, you're going to find different brands. If you go to a local place that has, you know, they'll have local brands, and there's the big national brands, which you're going to see everywhere. My suggestion is to look for obscure stuff and look for cool bottles and experiment. Find out for yourself what you like and enjoy the process. You never know what you're going to get. I don't think any of it's terrible. There's a few things I'm not a big fan of. Like, I don't want to do like a real strong ginger type thing, but I do like some ginger. If you're newer, fruit flavors are good. You know, they're going to be more sweet, more pleasing. But you know, experiment, just see what works for you. And you'll eventually find you'll find something new in your life that you didn't have before. And you'll fire off some brand new synapses and some new pathways in your brain with the kombucha. That's the game plan.
So what you're saying, if I can paraphrase this, is that kombucha is your pathway to enlightenment.
It could be, Scott.
And similar to the Buddha himself, Siddhartha Gautama, you'll need to try out whatever avenues in life that may lead you down that path of enlightenment. And you can't tell anyone what that may be, because each person's path is their own. Each person's kombucha is their own, basically.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm with you, man. I like this.
That's exactly it.
So if people try a new kombucha that they really like, or maybe they dislike, should they post it up on social media and tag you?
I think they should. They've been doing it, but I think they should keep doing it.
Should we make a Scott's Kombucha Lovers Facebook page or something like that?
Ooh, I don't know, but maybe we should do a hashtag.
There we go.
You know, I don't know.
Kombucha Enlightenment, you know, something like that. Hashtag Kombucha Enlightenment.
That's a lot of letters, Scott. We got to think.
Hashtag Buddha Bucha. How about that?
We'll work on it. But yeah, but you're on the right path. I like this.
Rain by Bucha.
Now,
Bucherons.
The last episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, you joined us on. You mentioned to Enrique, our caller from Portland, that you said there are a lot of different flavors out there. That made me, it led me to think that maybe you've been drinking a little kombucha now and then. Is this the case, or?
I've been drinking kombucha for a decade.
Do you get it regularly? Do you enjoy it?
Oh yeah. I have probably at least 3 or 4 bottles of kombucha a week.
You're kidding me.
No, I don't brag about my kombucha experience. It would be antithetical to the enlightenment that they bring me to, you know.
You don't pooch and tell.
Yeah, pooch and tell. No, never. Never. That wouldn't be gentlemanly either.
No.
Yeah. Maybe in the locker room, I might, you know, nudge a little bit and say, hey, I had some good kombucha this weekend, Scott. It wasn't bad at all. But other than that, no. GT's kombucha was like one of the first ones to come out.
Yeah.
And I found those, like literally, dude, like a decade ago or more even. I've been drinking those since, you know, when I lived in Arizona. It got to be kind of an issue.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was drinking those because they're still so pricey.
They are.
Yeah. And there was a place, I don't think they do it anymore. There was a place in Tampa where they had kombucha on tap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little kind of kombucha bar. But
you can find that at like Whole Foods and stuff. There's, here's the thing. There's a place here. It's literally like 5 miles from me. New Kombucha, spelled NEU.
Mm-hmm.
It's and the people who own it are really cool people. They love kombucha. They make some just kick ass flavors too. They've got it down, but it's mm-hmm. not national. I would love to be like, hey, would you guys sponsor our show? I'd love to have a kombucha sponsor, but it wouldn't really help with our national or international market. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if that would be a good payoff for them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, local or even national. I mean, I don't know how many you'd have to like document how many kombucha drinkers we have on the show and how much, you know, pull that you have with kombucha drinkers as far as.
I think it's growing.
Yeah.
I think it's growing. I get at least 3 to 4 people. I'm going to say at least 3 people a week that send me a picture of their hand holding a kombucha and saying, hey, I'm trying this for the first time.
That's awesome. I love it, man.
Yeah.
It's
fun, man. It's like you can find, and for me, you know, and I'm being serious, for me, it is like, it is a way for me to experience life, to try something new, to try something different, and allow myself that freedom to do something that I don't know what the outcome is going to be, you know?
Have you ever thought about brewing your own, like getting a mother going? And
everybody always asks me that. I like the experience of just drinking it personally. That would be a project, and I got my hands on a lot, you know?
Right. Yeah. I remember at one point, kind of like what happened with sorbet a year or so ago, but GTs, they had like something went down at their factory and they couldn't produce any kombucha for a while.
Yeah.
And I was hurting because I had, you know, I was having kombucha like every training day pretty much.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, I was really missing out on the kombucha. But they figured it out and they're back. I can't imagine that happening now. I think they only had maybe one place where they were brewing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had it like something got into the mother and they had to like shut them down. It wasn't good. But I think now they're probably bigger. Kombucha has really taken off.
I think the best one I had was in Costa Rica. It was expensive because Costa Rica isn't cheap. It was like $6 or something.
Holy crap. What flavor?
I can't even remember now. Just it was a fruit flavor though. And it just had such a punch to it. Like it just about rolled my eyelashes back.
Curled your toes?
Curled my toes, yeah. It was good.
That's funny. Yeah. Imagine your eyes rolling in the back of your head. You're like, oh.
Yeah, it was delicious. My God.
Yeah. Orgasmic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say? What do you say we get down to some business here? Let's run to a commercial break.
Yeah,
and talk about the book for a second there, as well as fortitudetraining.net, and then come back and we've got some IGF stuff to attend to.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back, guys.
Hey, everyone. Scott Stevenson here. My new book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, is out. You can get it at byobbcoach.com, as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble internationally.
If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Dr. Scott Rowdy Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally. First question we have today from Fabian. He says, I have a question for Dr. Scott, or actually both of you, because I'm not underestimating the knowledge of Scott McNally. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
That would be a mistake, most definitely.
But if I had to pick one of us, I'd go with you, Scott.
I'm just a better bullshitter.
Unless it was about kombucha.
Right.
You may have some good experience, absolutely. But yeah. Yep.
I submit on the kombucha knowledge.
Hashtag kombucha guru. Yep. is there any correlation between using fast-acting exogenous insulin, a dose that actually adds to your normal production, with IGF levels? I know IGF levels depend on GH levels, but I'm not sure what role does the hyperinsulinemia, presence of high insulin levels, have in here. I've been digging up some studies, but didn't find any real answers or didn't know how to interpret them right. Could you please touch on the subject? Thank you very much. Fan of the show since the beginning. Also, congrats Scott, on your client's pro card win. So he put this out. Yep, this was back in the middle of the season.
Yep,
I can still say the middle of this season.
Just barely.
With Joe and Cara. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Can you rephrase his question for me, Scott? Because the way that it read, there's some big words in there, and I want to know what you're about to teach me, I guess, is what I'm getting at here.
You want me to rephrase it so you can answer it? Or
just, No. Rephrase it so I can understand what he's asking.
He just wants to know what the impact of insulin is on IGF-1 levels.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right.
And insulin does increase IGF-1. So people, I keep on mentioning this, but IGF-1 is representative of nutritional status. So if someone is gaining weight, or for instance, in the obese tend to have higher insulin levels, kind of part of the metabolic syndrome, diabetes, or hyperinsulinemia, obesity, cardiovascular disease, et cetera. And they have higher IGF-1 levels as well. Actually, obese tend to have lower GH levels too, ironically enough.
Higher IGF then, but lower GH?
Profound. Yeah, huh. And that could be something, could be part of the reason why they are obese, is that they're not getting that lipolytic effect of growth hormone for whatever reason. I mean, maybe a contributory factor, but that actually runs counter to the somatomedin hypothesis. So the somatomedin hypothesis is the idea that's been around for decades and decades now, is that growth hormones effect in part on growth and development is mediated via what was originally called somatomedin C. So if you want to dig up the old research, so just call it look for somatomedin-C, letter C, and that's now called IGF-1. And so that's from like animal models where they, for instance, you can knock out the gene for IGF-1. And you get dwarfism, or you get impaired growth and development in animals.
Okay.
You can knock out, there's various animal knockouts that basically demonstrate that part of growth hormone's effect on growth and development is mediated through IGF-1. But, and that's why using growth hormone, because that's involved with, it's just a built-in aspect of growth hormone as it pertains to growth and development. That's why using exogenous growth hormone increases IGF-1. But insulin also does it. And that's like what you'll see, for instance, in like burn victims who are severely catabolic, because they're, you know, their body is trying to heal itself and they're just basically tissues getting eaten up and necrotic. They'll have really low IGF-1 levels. So IGF-1 has been used in that context, for instance. So anyway, insulin is indicative of fed state. The more you eat, the more insulin you have, and that will stimulate IGF-1 release. And that's why, well, part of the reason why IGF-1 is representative of nutritional status, whether you're overall gaining weight or anabolic or catabolic, as in losing weight, losing fat. Hmm. So he asked specifically about like fast acting exogenous insulin, a dose that actually adds to your natural production. And I have to go and look. I'm almost positive if you looked at, for instance, diabetics and looked at the amount of insulin that they're using versus IGF-1, you're going to find a correlation there. Hmm. It's pretty certain that that insulin stimulates hepatic release of IGF-1.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Actually, there's cross-receptor binding as well. It's worth noting. So that's why people will use IGF-1 and they'll go hypo.
Yeah.
I believe that IGF-1 binds with like 1/10 of the affinity to the insulin receptor that insulin does, or something like that.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's called insulin-like.
Yeah.
Factor 1, because it's very insulin-like. Hmm. So that's why, in part, like insulin is some people just blatantly say it's the most anabolic hormone in the body because it's anabolic pretty much everywhere.
Hmm.
Or anti-catabolic. So insulin-like growth factor is like insulin. And that's why it's called insulin-like growth factor.
Hmm.
1. So
that's interesting. I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know anything about the fact that you would see higher IGF levels in the obese. I would just assume that would be beneficial, you know, but it's obviously it's not. And with the low growth hormone, it's just kind of blowing my mind, I guess. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here.
Yeah, it's really pretty complex stuff. And the thing too, like if someone like, they can actually, sometimes they just measure IGF-1 as an indicator of, and this is sort of bizarre when it comes to the obese, because you tend to find growth hormone being low when IGF-1 is elevated in studies of obese people. But sometimes let's just use IGF-1 as an indicator of growth hormone level. So instead of, because growth hormone is released in a pulsatile fashion throughout the day.
Yeah.
So if you really wanted to see like, okay, what's the area under the curve for growth hormone? Is someone in need of growth hormone for quote unquote anti-aging purposes? This is in the past when that was, you know, more commonly prescribed. They would just do an IGF-1 measurement. And you could literally, kind of in the same way that someone might, if they want to get a testosterone replacement prescription, they could intentionally come off and get the blood measured when they were pretty certain they're hypogonadal.
Yeah.
Oh, testosterone's like, oh, okay, you need TRT. And doctors are kind of keen to that now, but that would be one way to sort of trick physician into prescribing testosterone is to just to manipulate yourself in that way. So you end up having low testosterone at the time of the blood draw. And you could also, the same thing could be done with IGF-1.
Huh.
Dieting. So if you measure IGF-1 levels when you're like, you know, pre-contest deep into a diet, they'll be really low.
Yeah. I've heard that before. I haven't tested my own to see, but I've heard that.
Yeah. So yeah, you might check that out. So that's why people, you know, like to use growth hormone because for one, they may not even know this, but this is why people are really so keen on IGF-1 being an indicator of how well your growth hormone is working, because if your IGF-1 is elevated, that tends to be associated with more of an anabolic state, a better ability to hold on to muscle mass.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's why if you look at the growth hormone or the literature, most of the studies, like with older folks, as far as having an anabolic effect on muscle mass or helping retain muscle mass as people get older, like they're not giving 10 IUs a day.
Yeah.
And 10 IUs a day will jack your IGF-1 levels pretty high, way outside the normal range. So that might be enough to help someone hold on to muscle mass or even gain muscle mass in a way that you don't see in the research literature when doses like that are not used.
Yeah.
So that's one part of the picture.
I'm sure, no matter what they're doing there, any of the research with IGF or growth hormone, I'm sure the doses are not anywhere near what bodybuilders do.
I mean, no, they sometimes with dwarfs, they'll do that kind of stuff. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, but not like, and that's a different deal. You're expecting, you know, the growth hormone does have an anabolic effect. That's why you use it.
Right.
So not making the same kind of measurements as they would in, a study of older folks when they're looking to see if the replacement, so to speak, growth hormone is helpful. So.
All right. I will move on to our next question. This would be another very Dr. Scott-ish question. Wondering Dr. Scott's thoughts on some new research, and you have to tell me what the name of this is, regarding the compound.
Urolithin B.
What is urolithin B, first of all?
It's a polyphenol that he says what it's found in there. There's a whole bunch of these polyphenols.
Pomegranates, walnuts, strawberries, red raspberries. It says directly caused muscular hypertrophy in rats by stimulating androgen receptors. So it sounds to me like this would be the platform to create a new super supplement, at least a super marketing campaign for a new supplement.
Yeah, so it's interesting. If you look at the article that he puts the link to there, he says that it stimulated muscle hypertrophy in rats. Actually, it was not in rats. It was in were typically used in vitro, so test tube, myotube model, where they're basically have developing muscle cells that are they're not even fully formed as cells. They're tubular sort of muscle cell precursor cells.
Okay.
It's called C2C12 myotubes. So that's where they found the effect, not in actual animals that were growing. So I'm not sure how much we can make of this question, because he's not even read the abstract close enough to know what. Maybe he was thinking of another article or something like that. But
okay.
So there's a whole bunch of studies that have looked at polyphenols, and mainly looking at preventing inflammation associated with muscle wasting. So rutin does this, extra curcumin has this effect as well. Quercetin does, the urolithin B, some other tannins. So phenols are just, I think there's six carbon. Chemists will probably want to string me up by saying this, it's a ring structure, similar to benzene. So it's a carbon containing ring structure, and a polyphenol just has a number of these phenol rings in it. One or two or more, and those are ubiquitous. They're found in all sorts of plants, fruits and vegetables, and that sort of thing. And they and spices especially. And the thing that they do to a large part, this one, I think they use some sort of an androgen receptor blocker, and found that they prevented the effect that they found in those myotubes. But they reduce NF kappa beta pathway, which is an inflammatory pathway, and they tend to reduce oxidative stress. This is like one thing, for instance, you'll find in the polyphenols found in green tea. They reduce oxidative stress, and they can improve mitochondrial function. So in doing so, you also reduce like free radical production. Mitochondria, just by their very nature, produce free radicals in proportion to the rate of respiration. So the more active you are, this is sort of a paradox of exercise. The more you exercise, the more your mitochondria consume oxygen to make ATP, so you can do that. And the higher the rate of oxygen consumption, the higher the rate of superoxide production.
Yeah.
So you make free radicals when you exercise, but you also upregulate glutathione peroxidase and catalase and some of the enzymes that are involved with quenching free radicals as well. So, yeah, there's all sorts of studies that are sort of point in this direction of sort of healthful anti-catabolic or even anabolic effects, but there's not a really strong body of literature on any of those in like humans, like human studies in conjunction with resistance training. So the way I sort of take that until they've like really, you know, done some studies and confirmed them, you know, at, like for instance, the body of literature with creatine has been like done just beat to death.
Right.
See a pretty consistent effect there. Not always, but many times. If you look at the body of literature as a whole, until they've got those out there looking, finding some added effect, what we have here is just more general evidence that fruits and vegetables and spices have healthful effects. Basically, our biology is meant to function in unison with taking in all these wonderful edible things that taste really good that Mother Earth has provided us, because they fine tune and have healthful effects on our system. It's really pretty cool. I mean, like, if you look at like fruits and vegetables and polyphenols found in those, they actually, they'll turn on, the NRF2, it's a particular pathway called NRF2 that activates, like throughout the genome, these antioxidant response elements that will upregulate sort of in unison a number of genes that protect us against toxins. So you eat fruits and vegetables, for instance, and there's all sorts of chemicals that, and you can just type in ARE pathway or NRF2 in Google Scholar, and you'll just see like thousands of papers looking at different phytochemicals that have healthful, and nutraceuticals, you'd call them too, that have health benefits. And a lot of this happens because when we eat those and our cells are exposed to those, it has anti-catabolic effects or it increases our antioxidant response capabilities. They have antioxidant effects, different than just like using, you know, a vitamin C supplement or in a large, like, you know, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, for instance, is a mega dose, or just a whole shitload of vitamin E in an amount you wouldn't normally get in a normal amount of food that you eat. So those, all those fruits and vegetables and things like rutin and curcumin, quercetin, et cetera, urolithin B and others, they have very healthful muscle mass promoting or anti-catabolic effects that point to the idea of just eat a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and spices that taste good, and you're probably doing yourself a service. But as to whether you can get any extra growth in a human that's, you know, that's training hard and taking enough protein as a pretty balanced diet from supplementing those things in large amounts, that I don't know. And that's the thing about like those in vitro the test tube type experiments is you're comparing none of that stuff, just a bare basic cell growth medium, with adding the stuff in an amount, and I'd have to go look at that paper that may or may not represent what you might get with, you know, a reasonable dietary supplementation. So it's a long ways. Growing myotubes in tissue culture is a long way from you know, an adult human supplementing with this stuff.
Okay.
Or muscle mass. So.
So this could take even like a decade or more, even possibly, depending on how fast they really get into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is like stuff like that, because you can, you know, as long as something is found in nature, it can be included as a dietary supplement.
Okay.
It's pretty easy to do that. So, that's why, for instance, for the longest time, like some of the pro hormones that were supposedly derived from, you know, something obscure somewhere. They're actually, you know, steroid molecules that may bind to the androgen receptor, but if they're found in a naturally occurring substance, then you can just make them a dietary supplement.
Yeah.
So these things, these compounds can be, if someone sees a study like that, and it's happened with several compounds like this one, then people can start supplementing with those. And if they really show an effect, people are like finding out like, oh shit, this stuff really works. Like the stuff that True Nutrition is selling now.
Yeah.
Get that compound. We talked about it before. I think you and I, Scott.
Yeah. That was off the air. It was like a testosterone like.
Yeah. So, if people find that stuff like that works really well, then someone comes along, some master's thesis student, and does a study.
Yeah.
And starts looking into it, you know. Someone starts figuring it out. It's like, oh, this actually does have an effect. So you can bypass, you know, the types of steps you would typically see when you're trying to put a pharmaceutical into the medical marketplace, where you have to, you know, go through different stages of clinical trials and that kind of stuff. You can go straight from theoretical to people consuming the stuff pretty rapidly. Mm. Yeah.
So good and bad. Just out of curiosity, when you were talking about, this is unrelated really, you were talking about quenching free radicals, and glutathione was one of the things you mentioned. I just, out of my own personal curiosity, have you ever used glutathione, and what have you heard about it? I'm just out of, like I said, personally interested to know.
It's orally, it's not very bioavailable.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are people that I haven't bought like the injectable version. You can get that. People sell that. You can get it sort of through kind of gray black market sources. Pretty easy to get, I think. You can make it even too. You can buy glutathione and make your own injectable if you want. The thing is, it comes back to this notion of hormesis, which I've touched on before. So you've got, and I think there was another question, we may not get to it, but somewhere in the lineup coming up soon, where there's an inverted U between the adaptations that you get and the stress imposed by whatever stimulus is bringing about those adaptations. So
Okay. We
know that if you completely quench free radicals with vitamin C and vitamin E, for instance, mm-hmm. I haven't seen this done with glutathione, because you'd have to inject it in order to get substantial elevations in the blood and in the body, because the oral is just, as we said, doesn't want to do that because of poor bioavailability. You can prevent adaptations to exercise training.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Because the free radical stress is part of the stimulus that brings about those cellular changes.
Wow.
So, you know, if someone, for instance, is for whatever reason, poor diet or sleep or just stress, or maybe they don't eat any vitamins or you don't eat any fruits and vegetables, and they've got an excessive amount of free radical stress or less, a greater than optimal amount of free radical stress, then injecting glutathione might be helpful for them. Mm. For someone else, it might not be. It might quench and diminish the normal amount of free radical stress, which fine-tunes cellular capacity and acts as a stimulus to bring about adaptation to exercise and that sort of thing. So I cover this in the book. There's kind of a whole section about it. Like another related topic is inflammation. So generally you find if like you use non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, these will diminish the protein synthetic effect of resistance exercise, which of course naturally you want. And they will diminish satellite cell activation signaling because some amount of inflammation is part of the remodeling process, part of the signal that stimulates the adaptational strategies in the cell. So you have to have that there.
Yeah.
But older folks, for instance, are more susceptible to muscle injury, and maybe for, you know, just perhaps just an effect of aging and or inactivity, may have too much inflammation.
Mm.
So one study came out of Ball State where they actually gave an NSAID, and found that the group that was given the NSAID, and this is an older folks, 65 or so, I think, they had greater muscle growth.
Okay, because they needed that.
They needed some reduction in inflammation to optimize, from a hormesis standpoint, the amount of inflammation to turn on the muscle growth. So if you have too much, you don't get optimal muscle growth. If you have too little, you don't get optimal muscle growth. There's a sweet spot somewhere in there.
Wonder how people would go about finding where their sweet spot was. Because I think, you know, the first inclination I think is I first heard about glutathione. It started getting popular a few years back with the HRT clinics, the, you know, like the big rejuvenation clinics were offering it. And I thought, ooh, that could be interesting.
Myers cocktails and that kind of stuff.
I want to take that. You know, that's like our first thought as a bodybuilder. But how would you determine if you could be a good candidate to improve with that, or whether it might actually get in the way? It sounds like.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. This is kind of like one of my sort of pet topics. I'll just toss one other thing out there that fits into what you're asking.
Okay.
You can get like arachidonic acid is Bill Llewellyn's supplement.
Yeah.
The evidence, he's got a couple studies that were done. One of them was done by a lab that their data really doesn't probably carry really too much weight in the scientific community anymore. And actually, Bill and I talked about this up in Canada a little bit. So, but arachidonic acid is pro-inflammatory because of how it feeds into prostaglandin synthesis. So the idea is that for some people, and this is what, you know, what Bill's thinking was here, is that because training turns on inflammation, the more inflammation, the better to some degree. And for some people, that may be the case. They may be, for whatever reason, have a really diminished inflammatory response, and they're missing out on that component in some way. And you can manipulate that by the fatty acid content, the arachidonic acid content in your diet. So if you supplement with that, people I've talked to, I haven't ever done it. You can get arachidonic acid in like red meat and that sort of thing, but people, I talked to one guy actually up there in Canada, just kind of chatting on the walk back to his hotel room, was on the same floor as mine. He said he tried that arachidonic acid. He was just sore as shit, like debilitatingly sore, way too much for him. So the ways you could test that out, for instance, is, you know, you could try using a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, like, for instance, an aspirin, something like that.
Yeah.
Or a low dose of naproxen. And see if you notice. You have to do it, you know, if you're going to do an experiment like this with yourself. Of course, I'm not telling anyone to take any drugs, even though those are over the counter, so I don't think there's any problem. But this is how someone would hypothetically do this, is you would take a low dose of that and see if you notice in the gym, for instance, just perceptively that you can warm up more easily, you're not as sore, you feel stronger, and or of course that you actually are stronger, and then pay attention to what kind of progress you're making.
Yeah.
You may be able to train more that way, but you wouldn't want to adjust both, you know, something that's an anti-inflammatory and your training.
Yeah.
So you want to keep your training the same as much as you possibly can, and don't use that to just band-aid the muscle soreness for your training, because then you're not getting any insight as to whether you've got too much inflammation. Maybe, though, on the other hand, if you're someone who doesn't get sore very easily or at all, you could try an arachidonic acid supplement, or try to increase, you know, natural sources of arachidonic acid and see if that maybe is at play here. So here's the thing. This is why we may have talked about this before. I've mentioned in a couple podcasts, but when they've looked at protein synthesis at the beginning of a period of training, like the first workout or so in, literally the first time the person does a full-blown workout, the protein synthetic effect of that initial workout, let's say at the beginning of like a three-month period of training, has literally zero correlation. Like one of the studies was 0.01 was the Pearson product moment correlation coefficient. Like it doesn't correlate at all with the eventual muscle growth you get. And so the theory, the very simple idea would be, is the more you turn on protein synthesis, and that would be represented by what you do in your first workout at the beginning of a training period, the more training gains you'd make. So the more so, you know, every single workout, and you're going to get more gains. Well, another group came along, and they said, well, there's something a little bit different about, especially in these studies when they're really people are changing their training program, or they're maybe even going from untrained to starting to become trained. You get really sore at the beginning, and that soreness goes away. There's a repeated bout effect.
Yeah.
So what they did was they tested the beginning of the training period, and they waited about 3 weeks, after which these people weren't getting nearly as sore. Some people get sore, like I tend to, and some people don't get most sore at all. And then they tested the muscle protein synthetic effect. So when they had them do a workout 3 weeks in, after that period of getting used to the program, when the soreness was gone, then they saw a very strong correlation, like 0.8, which is really pretty fucking high.
Mm-hmm.
That's really strong correlation between the extent to which protein synthesis was turned on by a workout and the eventual muscle growth that came about as a consequence of that period of training.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing, the takeaway that I get from that is that muscle soreness is, first of all, it's probably, it seems when you're really, really sore, you probably have a bunch of, there's some variability among individuals such that the extent to which protein synthesis is being turned on is not predictive of muscle growth. And it's probably a function of simply handling all the soreness and inflammation and balancing out the protein breakdown brought on by that really novel period of training. So when you're getting really, really sore, it's very possible that your cellular resources for repair, for whatever reason, whatever's going on with this repeated bout effect, haven't caught up in a way that allows that protein synthesis to contribute to muscle growth. So being sore all the time, like you are when you start a new program or you do a new workout that you haven't ever done before, or you like train with someone who you haven't trained with and you do twice the volume in a workout than normally would, or anything that really kind of blows you out of the water soreness wise, probably is not the best idea as far as making muscle growth happen.
Okay.
So, and it's a long ass answer, but my thought is that, and this is sort of the thing I've learned, speaking of, you know, the year 2018, is that getting too sore I'm sore all the time, like sore really, really easily, probably hasn't helped me over the years with gaining muscle mass.
Hmm. Have you always gotten that level of soreness you're talking about, or is it something that you've like developed? Okay, always.
Always. I've been sore for 30 plus years. Always have. I mean, I can tell, like peanut butter, for instance, tends to be pro-inflammatory for me.
Mm.
You know, if I eat too much peanut butter, I'll get really sore. You know, I can kind of reverse that the more omega-3s, and if I supplement with fish oil or make sure I'm eating, you know, salmon, serving a salmon like 4 or 5, 6 times a week, I do pretty well. Stress makes a difference.
Sure.
But, yeah, so I mean, I love to train. If I could just, I would train, you know, for 5 or 6 hours a day if my body let me get away with it. But it doesn't. So, yeah, so it's an interesting thing like this. You know, you have to find your sort of sweet spot. And my guess, based on that literature, trying to figure out, you know, what the protein synthetic effect has to do with muscle growth, is that that period of soreness, you've just got that protein synthesis is not predictive of muscle growth. It's not contributing to muscle growth. It's just dealing with the insult of the soreness. So when you're really sore, it's probably not the best scenario to be in order to make your workouts accumulate in terms of accumulating a positive protein balance.
Yeah.
Training day after training day, week after week, month after month to gain muscle mass. So being too sore is not good. And that fits with the hermetic notion of inflammation.
A lot of stuff right there.
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. You know, it's one of the things, I mean, when you think about, there's so much variability. This is a whole other talk that, I think I did this at the Arnold Classic last year with John, like why you don't look like a pro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if you just look at the protein synthetic effect of a given, just a single workout, it's all over the place.
Hmm.
Like some people get like nothing, and some people get like literally there's a tenfold range in the relative increase in protein synthesis. It's ginormous. Same thing with muscle growth. It's all over the place. And it would be really interesting. I'd love to see a study or someone try to tease out, is like, okay, so let's try to somehow, you know, break down, because they've done this with like responders and non-responders, or like moderate non-responders and extreme responders, and looked at growth factor release,
okay,
in response to training, and also the number of satellite cells, the satellite cell density in muscle cells, and those things are predictive of muscle growth over the long haul. So there's something there. It would also be interesting to see, you know, what happens, like, what if we take the guys who don't get sore hardly at all from a standardized workout and put them in maybe a higher volume group? Maybe they need to train more.
Yeah.
And take those who get sore really easily and put them in a lower volume group and try to progress them as best they can, and see if you can use the initial amount of soreness that you get, or the soreness you're getting even along the course of a training, as a sort of a diagnostic tool to dictate your training, to guide you. It's like, okay, I'm getting way too sore. I've been too sore all the time. I can still train. I can still progress when I'm sore. I know that's the case, because I've done that many, many times over the years.
Yeah.
But it may not be optimal. And so can you use that natural, the extent of to which someone has an inflammatory response, as a tool to guide how much you train? And most people would do that, like, unless they're idiots like you and me, Scott. Just like, I don't care if I'm sore. Like, that doesn't matter to me. I just want to do whatever it takes to make progress.
Right. But
the normal person would back off. They'd auto-regulate, you know, around that soreness more so than I probably have. So that would be interesting to see. And then, like, could you take 100 people and take the people that are get the most sore, the ones who are just, for whatever reason, just have a really strong inflammatory response, and you could document that as well, and then give half of them non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, another half none, and then take the other half and break them up too.
Hmm.
So you've got like sort of those who get sore and those that don't, and like, could you, like, if you like gave non-steroidal anti-inflammatories to the people who don't get sore, would you like they don't have much inflammation, and you'd be blocking it pretty substantially?
Yeah,
maybe you'd get like no growth out of those people. Whereas in the people who get really sore, if you temper their inflammation with a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, maybe you would maybe you'd get better growth.
Hmm.
And you could go the other way around and give them that's the way you'd set up an arachidonic acid supplement study, in my mind, is with that hormetic model of muscle growth in mind. Is like, let's figure out where people are in terms of the extent of inflammation that they get.
Yeah.
Naturally, and then give it to those who tend to have little inflammation, you'd expect a better growth. And those who have lots of inflammation, you'd expect less growth. Does that happen?
Yeah.
That's what I'd expect, at least. I can't imagine, like, that guy I talked to, he said he was just crippled. He tried arachidonic acid and he was just fucked up.
It was that powerful for him, huh?
It was really, really bad for him. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it really was. He said there's just no way, you know, he had to just give the stuff away or something like that. It was obvious that this is not going to be helpful for him.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's interesting. It's a lot of stuff. We, obviously we have a bunch more questions, but, we covered our two typical questions for the
two
day.
Questions. We did
have our mailbag stuff earlier. That was fun.
That's true. Yeah.
It got me thinking, man. I have no idea, you know, because I asked you about glutathione. Then I still, like, I don't see a place in my life for it. I'm trying to think of, like, well, if I were in this scenario, you know, it's like I can't see it as being something that I need right now.
Well, one thing, I mean, there was a guy, an old powerlifter, and I don't know if maybe some powerlifters could chime if they do this, but this guy was kind of a, you know, like many powerlifters are, kind of a maniac. And one thing they would do, I may have mentioned on the show before, is they would go in and they would actually do this as part of meat preparation. It just kind of like, because they like to fucking go crazy.
Yeah.
And they'd go in and like on a Saturday, like this is like in a garage type gym type thing, and just like crank the metal and just fucking go bonkers and do like, you know, 20 sets of triples or something like that.
You know?
Max effort. But they would load up on aspirin.
Oh, like, yeah. You did tell me this one.
Yeah. So what that would do is prevent them from getting just, you know, having rhabdomyolysis probably.
Right.
To some degree, and reduce. And I'm not suggesting anyone to do this. I'm just saying, reporting what was told to me.
Right.
But then they get to train their nervous system. They get a lot of work in without the associated muscle damage and joint issues and that sort of thing that could fuck them up, you know, when they're coming up on a meet and mess up their future training.
Right.
But you know, when you can go in and, like, you know, and do, you know, 20 sets of triple, I don't know if that's exactly what it was they did,
right,
but you can 20 triples is a lot. Like, that's really good neurological practice.
Hmm.
That's really important to felt that load and then be able to, like, move right past that and not, like, you know, feel like you were run over by a steamroller the next day trying to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Which you would have been. So that's a way. People that I've talked to have used the injectable glutathione as they have bad joints.
Hmm.
Then that could be just a matter of they got systemic inflammation.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So for them, their joints are better, their tendons are better. They could train harder and they feel better because they're probably a little too inflamed overall.
Right.
And it's kind of a hormetic effect. It's not specific to muscle per se, but it just allows them to go in the gym and get their training sessions in without pain. So they were using it kind of to band-aid, you know, arthritis essentially.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you already trained today, didn't you, Scott?
I did. Yeah.
I'm going to head out and do that shortly. There's a new gym opening up down the road for me, and the owner's a nice guy. He's having a party tonight for New Year's Eve, so I'm going to head down there and get some actual training in. He's going to have food and drinks and stuff, but you could go in and work out in the gym part too. So I'm going to actually take advantage of the gym itself.
You're going to sip champagne between your sets? Champagne intra-workout?
Intra-workout champagne. Yes. Yeah. No. Nice. God, no. God, no. Maybe a post-workout kombucha. That'll do it for me.
There you go. Is it fizzy? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you drink them on your training days.
Because I was having carbs and they tasted really good.
That's
and
what I figured.
Not like carbs, you know, in kombucha, but it's just as a kind of little treat. You know, there were a couple years when I was in Arizona that, I just sort of standardized my meals and I'd train and then I'd go down to, I think it was Sunflower Market where they had kind of earthy, crunchy type grocery store down the block and they had kombucha and I actually knew the woman who rolled the sushi there.
Oh.
And yeah, she would make sushi hand rolls for me. So I would go in, I'd go shopping and I'd tell her what I wanted and she'd make them specific for me. And so I'd had like the standardized sushi hand roll post-workout meal with a kombucha a few times a week.
Sushi is always the go-to for bodybuilders.
I love that stuff, man. I don't know what it is. I'm hoping to have some tonight with my mom, actually.
Ooh, that'd be nice. I'm looking at your website right now, Dr. Scott, Dr. ScottStevenson.com, also fortitudetraining.net. I don't see anything about the seminar up there yet.
No, we're still getting the all the materials put together.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been kind of dealing with my house and some other things. We'll leave out a podcast. Yeah, I've been kind of busy. So sure. John and I have just been both really busy. I think it'll work out, but we haven't got those flyers up. But soon, probably in the next 4 or 5 days, I'm hoping.
Okay. I figured I'd mention it now versus, you know, having people ask after. So
yeah, we'll put the link will be up on my website. I'm sure John will put it on his. We'll put it on Instagram. We did put something up a couple of days ago, just sort of a little teaser so people can hold the date, the 28th of February. But they'll go and buy if we did it like we did last year, I have to set all that up too, where they buy a ticket and they'll download a PDF with which will be their ticket.
Okay.
Kind of like buying an ebook from me.
Yeah.
Same, it'll be use the same server Sendal probably, so I'll do again. So
perfect.
Pretty seamless.
Nice. I did you see my post I made? I put like a coffee table book picture up.
Well, yeah, I did.
With Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach.
Of course. That's your hook, line, and sinker when you have a friend over, you know. And
it's like the bachelor pad. That's like my – I like what you had. You took it even a step further. You were like, you know, because I said – for, you know, not everybody's on social media looking at my stuff. I said, hey guys, this is the new tactic for picking up ladies. You can look smart and put this book out on your coffee table. And you took it further, Scott. You're like, and you could even say, you know, the author personally. Gosh. I like that. That's good.
I taught him all he knows pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah. He just decided to take the sort of the things that I taught him and put out a book, you know. Yeah. I'm a little too modest for that whole book. He's a good guy. I like him anyway.
I mean, some people call it selling out, making a book and all that. He's all right. He's a good guy.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You definitely, anyone who wants, you know, if I can be your sort of your wingman, you know, from afar, you're welcome to, you know, drop my name or whatever. I don't know if that will actually work. That might actually work, you know, to get her to leave.
Yeah.
That work against you. Like, oh, that dick? Yeah. Hell no.
Or just like the whole bodybuilding thing in general. I don't think that's a big selling point. You know what I mean?
That was the other thing. It's like when someone goes in and you have like a giant trophy case, you know, or like pictures of yourself all over the wall. It's just like, you might as well, like, welcome to my egomaniac narcissist cave.
Yeah.
Here's where I just relish my greatness. Please come and relish it with me. That's not a turn on. That's not working.
Big glossy 8x10s everywhere, you know?
I just gave away with my house being remodeled. I gave, I don't know what he did with them. My contractor, I gave him, I don't know, probably about 15 or 20 trophies.
You mentioned that kind of in passing. I don't know whether we talked about it on the show or it was just us. Had I known, I would have wanted one of your trophies. You realize that, don't you? I would have hung it up in my studio here. I don't care which one it is. I just, it'd be like this. I don't know. It'd be fun. It'd be like, this is Scott Stevenson's trophy from whichever show, I don't care.
Well, I kept like some of the overalls and the national level ones that were like, I got one from the Junior USAs years ago. That's like it's like a knife for killing hogs or something like that. I don't know. It's a big knife. In fact, I took it out of the box. I never even took it out of the box, to be honest. It's still in the box. None of those trophies have been up. They were all they'd just been they've never been put up anywhere since I've gotten them. I've never had a trophy case or anything like that. So I gave them to my contractor. I think he took them down to the YMCA, or he was going to. He never told me exactly what to do with them, to give them to so kids, you know, that they have a little weightlifting contest or something like that.
Cool.
You know? Yeah, then the kids can have, you know, it's bodybuilder or a you know, powerlifter, whatever. It doesn't matter. That just for them to have a trophy would be kind of cool. So,
hell yeah, that's cool, yeah, man. I never figured. Put my stuff out either. I put up my swords with a W, mm-hmm. and an axe. I'm looking at them right now in the studio, but it's just because they were just here, and I was like, well, I don't have anything on the walls. I'll put them up, but it's not really that. It's not my thing, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean. It's just for me, the pursuit has nothing to do with the trophy, really. Yeah, I kept the little placards.
Okay.
Who knows? It'll probably be 10 years someone will probably have to do it for me because I will never get around to it. But I'm just going to put those in a frame someplace.
Oh, that'd be cool, man.
Yeah. And then I just like, there you go. That's just one little 8x12 thing with, you know, all those suckers in there.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's enough space.
That'd be cool. I guess,
pictures of my dogs,
right?
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier Metro Fitness in West in Columbus. That's where the offices are for the Arnold too. And I guess that they have a Sando there. It's in the office.
Whose Sando is it?
Okay, so it might not be an actual one. It might have been one that was
replica.
Yeah, it might be a replica, like the actually made but never used type thing, kind of like made just for them.
Okay.
Type thing.
I thought maybe it was maybe one of Arnold's, you know.
Yeah, it could be cuz he's good friends with them over there. So
I would think it's called the Arnold Sports Festival, right?
Yeah, so so I could see him giving them one,
right?
But yeah, I don't know.
Huh. I don't know.
I'm eventually planning on finding out. I got to see this thing. It's in the Arnold offices. It's all fascinating to me, man. All that stuff is fascinating.
Does Niels Andersen make the statues? I don't know who makes them.
Ooh, who makes the Sandow?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good question, man. I have no idea.
I'm trying to think if I ever, I've just seen, you know, pictures of them on like Ronnie Coleman's videos and Jake Cutler's videos and folks like that. But I mean, to be honest, I mean, it is because it's the Sandow, it's, you know, it's badass. Obviously it's, you know, it's very, very meaningful for that purpose, but just as a trophy in of itself, it's not like, well, holy crap, that's the badass trophy. It's, you know, kind of underwhelming in that respect. But
yeah, I've seen like Jay Cutler had some, I think he had like an Arnold cup that was like all crystal, this huge like glass thing. That was beautiful.
Right. Yeah. Some of those trophies are pretty amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
I have some of those, some of the ones that I kept were just kind of cool trophies that were like the Niels Andersen that are like, you know, 3 feet tall almost or 2.5 feet tall. I've got some like cool Viking trophies and
oh, cool.
One of the ones I got looked just like Arnold. It was
pretty really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've seen those at several shows that it's obviously that's Arnold.
Yeah.
You know, looks exactly like him.
Yeah.
And then there's some weird ones. Like I have one is just a Viking. He's got like a Viking hat on and he's got like chains that he's like pulling up off the ground that are on there. It's like, okay. It's cool. You know, it doesn't necessarily pertain in any way specifically to the show or wasn't like, it was like the Viking cup or something like that I won. It was just, they decided to use Viking. That's just one of the options I think that they made. So
they clicked on the Viking option.
I guess. So anyway, those kids at the Y or wherever will have some cool trophies.
That's a badass idea, man. I like that a lot. I like that a lot versus leaving them sitting in a box, collecting dust somewhere, doing nothing, you know?
You know, my favorite trophy, I was just telling a friend about this. My favorite trophy was from my buddy. He may be listening, Mike Gustafson. This is a funny story. So this was, it was like 2007 or 2000. I can't remember. It was the year before I actually won the Arizona. I can't remember which year that was right now. But it was that meaningful to me.
Yeah.
I think it was 2009. I'm being positive. But so anyway, in 2008, the year before, I came in pretty good shape. Rusty Jeffers, who was an IFBB pro, he lives there in Arizona. He's kind of a local legend. He actually came up to me before the night show was over. He's like, "Hey, I just want to say congratulations on taking the show. Your conditioning was great." It was really kind of like pretty cool, you know? Cause I hadn't even met him. He just took the time to come up and say hello. And, so that was very cool. And, my buddy Mike had been to the night show and he saw me up on stage, like maybe one of the Masters categories. And he'd seen the prejudging too. And, earlier in the day. And, so he went home, he had a client, I think the next day he's a trainer. And, so I'm driving back from, Phoenix to Tucson and Mike calls me on the phone. I'm talking to him on the phone and he's like, "Holy shit, man, you look fucking awesome."
Yeah.
He's just like, "That was just badass. And when you turned around, Holton, like no one was even close. It was unfucking believable." He's just going on and on. And I'm like, I let him go for a few minutes. I'm like, "Mike," he's like, "What?" I said, "You know, I didn't win." And he's like, "What?" He's like, "No, I didn't win anything. I don't think I even won my Masters category." And there was a guy who, actually I felt bad for the guy cause he had abscessed quads and delts, like big, ball size. Yeah. He outsized me. I don't think he out conditioned me. Wasn't my impression, but he won. I think he even felt kind of bad that he won given when he was declared the winner of the open over or winner of my weight class. It just seemed, he had a little bit of a guilty look, like, "Oh man."
Yeah.
So I felt kind of bad for him. So my buddy Mike was so pissed, cause he was just mad that, you know, that he saw that injustice. It was like no big deal. So he went out like the next day, like the next Monday to a local trophy shop and he found, it was just actually a trophy it was a powerlifting trophy. It was a guy squatting.
Yeah.
And he had a placard made. He may even handwritten on there.
That'd be even better.
I think it was actually Scott. You're our champion. I know, that's my favorite trophy. I'm keeping that one for sure. That's the most badass trophy I have.
That's so cool, man. So,
yeah, that was really cool. So, I had forgotten about that. Cause like I said, all the trophies were in bags, in storage, but, that and my grandfather gave me one when I was a kid that I'd forgotten about. It just says Scott champ.
Aww.
Yeah, so those are my favorite trophies. It's about It's all plastic.
Yeah.
It's about 2 inches tall, and I have no idea even why he gave it to me.
But, cool. Yeah. But you loved it, I'm sure.
I loved it. Oh, yeah. It was just, you know, I knew it was from my grandfather. So those will be, if I ever have like a little trophy case, those will be right in the front.
Nice.
Those ones, yeah. So.
All right. Well, guys, let's get a good start. 2019 is here, and you know, let's think about what our goals are. That's first, and then let's figure out what we want to do to carry them out, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking kombucha. What kombucha flavor am I gonna have later today?
That's a good start.
Yep, I agree.
For another episode of Muscle Minds, with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally. We will see you guys soon.
Happy New Year. All right, my man.
Voices Radio Network.